Have you ever felt that pang of disappointment when you couldn't add a ticket to your collection because it was digital? Or maybe you just lost it? Well, StubForge.com is here to change that. Imagine this: tickets that not only look but feel like the real deal. Because each ticket from StubForge is printed on the same quality stock that Ticketmaster uses and printed with genuine ticket printers. It's like holding a piece of the concert, the game, or the show right in your hands. But StubForge isn't just about replacing tickets. With the easy-to-use interactive designer, you can create custom tickets for anything, from concerts to sports games, pregnancy announcements, or parties. Why not make your invitations stand out with tickets that are as unique as your event? And if you're trying to complete a back catalogue of missing tickets, StubForge offers bulk discounts to make it both easy and affordable. With StubForge, you can once more give your loved ones physical tickets and see their eyes light up instantly at the best gift you can give. So whether you're looking to reignite your ticket collection, craft the perfect gift, or send the coolest invites, head over to StubForge.com. Start creating today and see how StubForge makes every ticket a story worth saving. Visit StubForge.com and start making tickets today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My next guest on the Bravery Academy is Alison Armstrong. She's going to share her wisdom on understanding men and women and human behaviour. Whether you are in a relationship or single, this episode is a must listen as she shines a light on how you can shift your awareness and communication and get the most out of your relationships in life by understanding your instincts and the choices you have. Welcome along, Alison, to the Bravery Academy. I am very excited to have you here. As I talked to you off the recording before, I'm a fangirl from several years. I love your work, what you do and how you share the understanding of how we can connect better with men and women. To me, is while it feels like you've been doing this work for years, I feel like it's groundbreaking. So thank you.
And that's what I think that's interesting about it. It's been groundbreaking since 1991.
Yeah. So can you share a little bit about where you live and where you are from?
Let's see. So I'm from California, fifth generation native Californian. Grew up mostly in Southern California. And I moved to Colorado in 2013. And I live in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, which is northwestern Colorado.
And what got you curious around studying men back in 1991?
Have you read The Queen's Code or listened to the audiobook, The Queen's
Code? I've listened to the audiobook.
Okay,
yep, around frogs.
Yeah, that is the best way to do it. So what happened in the first chapter of The Queen's Code to Kimberly actually happened to me. A colleague and I were at a seminar. I'd been involved in transformation since I was 19. And she asked that question of the trainer, why is it that men are wonderful in the beginning? And she was really snarky about it. Then they turn into sports watching, pizza eating, beer belching, couch slugs. Why is that? And when he called her a frog farmer and elaborated, a woman who brings out the worst in men, my life flashed before me, just like Kimberly. But I was really excited about it because I had tried, I'd been married and divorced. I had a son who was, at that point, he would have been 2.5. And I'd tried my darndest to change men unsuccessfully. And so the idea that I might be doing something that was having them respond in particular to me, like how they responded to me, I had something to do with, And it had me realize that I knew couples where I thought he was a jerk, but she was happily married. Like, maybe she gets a different man than I do. And so that's what got me started. I just wanted to know, how was I bringing out the worst in men? And I really, honestly, I thought it would take 2 to 3 months to learn everything that was worth knowing about these shallow, soulless, feeling absent, lesser humans than women. And that's really what I thought about them. And from the get-go, I had 3 men in my life that I was, like, today you'd call it their coach, 3 single men. And because I wasn't romantically involved with them and I wasn't trying to get anything from them, I didn't bring out the worst in it. They loved me, right? And I loved them. And as I started paying attention to when they did something that surprised me, and I'd try to figure out why they did it, and then I fortunately would check with them to see if they did that for the reason I thought. And that's when the education began. The first time, his name is Brooke, he said, I would never do anything for that reason, and no self-respecting man would. And I'm thinking, I do things for that reason all the time, and almost all women do. I'd asked him if he'd done something for his mom that he didn't want to do in order to avoid upsetting her. And he was like, ew. I was just disgusting to him for any man to ever do something other than what they thought was right in order to not upset somebody. And so that's what started. And I've just been fascinated ever since.
Does it keep evolving as well, what you learned from them over these 30 plus years?
Well, I'd say there's 2 major things. One is if you think of a spiral, right? So like, I don't know if they have slinkies in New Zealand, but
yeah.
Back in the day, right? So slinkies are basically spirals. And so since 1991, it's as if there are a finite number of points in the circle. And so it gets revisited again and again and again, like something like single focus. Caught on to single focus back in 1991. And I'm still paying attention to the effects of single focus. I keep seeing more about it in different contexts and in different levels. And then the other thing that's affected my work a lot is shortly after I laid down my sword, after I gave up emasculating men, I met my husband, Greg. And we were together for almost 28 years and raised a family, started the business, went through all different stages of life, of his career and then his retirement, and you know, went through all the things that people go through. And after he died, suddenly, I was sure I didn't want to be in a relationship. I wasn't willing to have anything other than a partnership. And I knew how much that required, how much attention, how much presence, how much diligence, how much bravery that required. And I just couldn't imagine meeting someone that would be worth it to do all that again. And then I did almost 3 years ago. And so in interacting with Dan, I basically had to relearn everything in the context of getting to know you, dating, new relationship. What are we for each other anyway? Where are we going? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, I had to really learn from top to bottom. And since about 70% of our students are singles, they're really glad that happened.
I'm really glad that's happened to you. I know that sounds terrible, but the dating part, not losing your life partner, yeah. But that's this understanding. I went through this similar, well, later with the divorce around the mid-30s, and this kind of like, what is going on with men and relationships? And then coming out at this stage, trying to learn to date, and then going through a fraud and someone being a con man, my world around this aspect of how do you trust and connect with men was like flipped on its head. And I was like, there's got to be a different way of doing it, which is what led me to understanding your work. And particularly, I was like, oh God, been doing that for a long time in that marriage. Poor bugger.
Yeah, we're really good at it. Even when we don't mean to be, we're really good at it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so that's how I got started. And that's why I'm still here. It still is unfolding. And I'm fascinated by these creatures, these amazing creatures. They're so different than us.
They're so different. What I've loved about your work as well is you connect, similar to me, with my background as physio, but it sounds weird from this kind of work that I do now, but it's around the evolutionary biology around how our body reacts and how our brain reacts. And so how do we deal with other humans? And so when I've looked at the way that you talk about instinct and choices, and men and women are different in that, I'm like, can you share more about the different instincts we have then as men and women?
Well, a lot of people know that we have two nervous systems. And, you know, when we take a deep breath, it's one of the ways that we shift from our limbic nervous system to the prefrontal cortex. And that place where we make choices and have conscious discernment is always a split second behind the limbic brain. So once I started paying attention to it, what I could see was literally the feeling, and it would happen in the, like, the back of my neck and my shoulders, the feeling of impulse, that it, like, this feeling of being thrusted forward. And usually, I mean, it instinct, you know, is our response to the perception of a threat or an opportunity. And the impulse is different. Like, my impulse throws me forward, right? Because fight is my first place to go. Some people's impulses, right, is backwards. It's to flee. And some people's impulse is just to freeze. And most of us have a sequence. Like, when the fight doesn't work, then I freeze looking for a new fight. And then if I can't find one, then I figure out how to flee, how to get that heck out of there. But I started becoming aware. I was actually in an airport. I had all the food I could possibly need on this trip because I eat a very particular regimen. I had plenty of water, but I was about to get on a plane and I noticed every single place I could get food or water, my body I had to keep reminding myself, I have a plenty, I have enough. And that's one of the things about our instincts, is they don't have an off switch. They don't say, like, the limbic system doesn't stand down. It doesn't go, we're safe enough.
Yep.
We have enough. We've got enough money in the bank. We all got plenty of time. It doesn't say any of that. It's always under stress. And, you know, it's one of things that attracted me to your podcast, because so many people, I have a friend who would say conflate. He has quite the vocabulary, my friend. And he would say we conflate bravery and fearlessness. Mm-hmm. And we think to be brave is to have no fear. But it's not, right? As you know, bravery is the ability to act in the face of fear. And our limbic system, it lives in a state of fear. So can we make a conscious choice to do something that to our instincts is putting us at risk, is putting our survival at risk? Which might be in the form of someone's going to dislike us. Someone's going to abandon us, right? Someone's going to reject us. So, you know, those thoughts will be right there. Oh, no. And so much of my work since 2017 has been about being true to ourselves in those moments. And that's a lot what I had to experience with Dan. From our very first conversation, saying things to him, and thinking in my head, if you're going to run, run now.
Yeah.
This is your moment.
And there were so many of those things. Each of us has so many things about us that we're sure we're going to reject it. For sure, that people will think that's too something, right? Like in the first few minutes of our first conversation, I asked him, you know, the woman who introduced us, one of my students, I said, did Valerie tell you that I'm a widow? And he said, yes. And I'm very sorry for your loss. And I said, thank you. I said, well, something you should probably know is that my husband's very much a part of my life. He's still providing for me. And he probably picked you. And
I remember thinking, okay, you're going to ride right now.
And there was this long silence. And then he said, yeah, I can feel him. This energy.
I've got goosebumps right now as you share that story.
And I just was like, okay, that'll work. Right. And then it was just another thing and another thing of revealing what we would normally want to conceal. Right. We normally don't want to entrust someone with our real dreams, really, like what we're really up to. And it's funny because the same thing happened on my first date with Greg, because he came right out and he said, what are your dreams? And he meant it. He wanted to know my dreams. And so I told him, including that I wanted to have at least one more child. And it came out of my mouth, right? And I want to be home to raise them. It's like, oh my gosh, 1991. Liberated woman saying she wants to be financially supported. Oh my gosh. Right. And, you know, I said I wanted to have a foundation and what I wanted to do with the foundation. And I didn't know until later, in some ways, much later, that on his side, like when I mentioned a foundation, he's like, oh, I want to fund that. Right. And when I mentioned, you know, having more children, he thought she should have two girls. And he was sorting himself and he kept sorting himself in. Do you know, if she's with me, she's going to have that. If she's with me, it's going to be like that. And, you know, on our first date, I asked him, I said, how important is sex to you?
Christian. Love that as a first line. We're not the first line.
It was many hours into our first date, maybe like the seventh hour or something. But it was my last niggling concern about this person. I said, how important is sex to you? And he's like, important? What do you mean? I said, I didn't get enough in my first marriage. He came right out and said it. And I found out later, and this is years later, that in that moment, he promised himself, if I was with him, I would have as much sex as I want to.
And it's so beautiful that he was like, I'm going to honor this woman's needs.
Man. And that's really what the biggest thing I've discovered is so many people, they want to find the person, right? Find the person, tick all the dots, right? And then they think it'll just take care of itself. I met the right person, so it'll take care of itself from here. And we don't pay enough attention to... No, it won't take care of itself. We've got to take care of each other. And we take care of each other by finding out and respecting what the other person needs, by finding out and respecting our own needs, by getting what we need in order to give them what they need, and giving them what they need to give us what we need. Not only do we both get our needs met, but we both get to give what we need to give. And that's what most people overlook, right? Because that's one of the biggest needs we have. We have the need to give. And if the other person won't let us give, it feels like rejection. We keep being really hurt and really stymied. And that was one of the most important things that I found out about men was how often they were thwarted in trying to give what feels to them as this is mine to give. I'm supposed to give this. And women you know, one of the backlashes, right, of feminism, which we needed it, but one of the backlashes is proving we can do everything ourselves.
Hell yeah.
And thinking that a man offering to do something for us is because he thinks we can't. Instead of, he knows we can open the door. He knows we can pay the bill. He knows we can. We're very capable. And if he doesn't think so, he doesn't want to be around us, right? He knows all that, but he's offering because he wants to. He wants to give that. And one another thing I had to sort out, Emma, was how often women offer to get credit for offering.
Ooh.
How many times we offer hoping the person will say no, because we don't really want to give it, but we need credit, need to be liked by offering. And so since so many of our offers are insincere, we assume men's offerings are insincere. But they're not. Very few, very, very few of them offer something they don't actually want to provide, hoping you'll say yes. But we keep telling them, we show them we can't receive. Like, they'll pay us a compliment, and the voice in our head thinks they're wrong. It will honor the voice in our head. Instead of the man who's standing there spending his time and energy saying, you look beautiful. Oh, no, I don't. So, I mean, we even reject when they compliment us because they want to uplift us. They want to contribute to our confidence, which is the most attractive quality to them. And that's why they compliment us. And we turn it into a struggle, by the way. Men also suck at receiving.
Good. So it's both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Their instincts are around providing and taking. There is no instinct to receive. Receiving is a conscious choice for all of us.
Hi there. I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, so while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.
Our lives were never the same after we learned our 21-year-old daughter, Kristen, was murdered by her ex-boyfriend. It's a parent's worst nightmare. How much did we really know about domestic violence back then? Clearly not enough. Now we know plenty. We know domestic violence, or DV, can happen to anyone. 1 in 3 women suffer physical violence at the hands of intimate partners during their lifetimes. 1 in 3. I'm Bill Mitchell, host of the When Dating Hurts podcast. And my interviews with DV counselors, law enforcement, and especially actual DV survivors give the pandemic of domestic violence the attention it deserves. The When Dating Hurts podcast. It's a series of lives being saved.
How do we nurture us so that we can then receive? So as a woman, how do we do that? How do we nurture ourselves to then be better for the men that are in our lives?
You want me to answer that?
I would love you to answer that.
Well, since you've paid enough attention to what I do, you know I'm really practical.
Yep.
And so I break things down into small, simple awarenesses, if you will. And so in answer to your question, the first would be to identify what are the flavors What are the flavors? And you can call it femininity. You can call it an open state of mind. But what are your favorite flavors of femininity? Because there's so many. And one of the ways to distinguish it, you were talking about masculinity, right? So get her done, take me, kick ass, make it happen, right? So the energy is very, it's like an erection, frankly.
That's how I work. I'm constantly on erection mode. Thank you for that one.
Yeah, you got to get it up, right?
Yep.
And drive it home. And we're perfectly capable of doing that. It will cause exhaustion because we don't have nearly the testosterone that men have. But we're perfectly capable of doing all that. And it's even thrilling to do it. It can feel very empowering. But we'll end up fatigued. We'll end up with heart attacks in our 30s. There's all these consequences. Besides the consequence of in a romantic relationship, men are looking for the most capable, competent woman that they can attract and keep. And to them, their ability to keep her is because they have something to contribute to her, something that they can provide for her that she needs him for. So us communicating over and over again, I don't need you, I don't need you, I don't need you. They're like, well, I guess I'll go find someone who does. And so our lack of receptivity, right? So we've got this masculine, make it happen. I don't need you and I'll prove to you that I don't. And then the lack of receptivity, I mean, that's what has so many of us end up wanting a romantic relationship and not having them. And even just wanting to feel cared for by men in general, but we don't, because we're sending all of them away, romantic and otherwise. And so if you start with thinking of feminine energy, if that word is completely valid, and I took a definition from chess.
The music? Well, the game.
The game, chess. The game. The definition of the queen in the context of chess is the most powerful piece able to move any number of unoccupied spaces. And when I read that, I was like, oh, that's femininity. Femininity is an unoccupied space.
Yes.
So where masculinity sucks up all the space, uses up all the space, right? Make way for it. Femininity is the opposite. It causes in the way that fertile ground does. So it's an environment in which things come alive. And this is what has women seem so magical to men. They'll say, that doesn't happen when you're not here, right? And they're like, how did you do that, right? And so if you think, Emma, about, I'll give some examples for everybody, some really empowering feminine spaces. One would be patience, because patience comes from our connection to the eternal. We have all the time in the world. And patience is required to end up being effective with men. There's so many things about them that can drive us crazy. It requires patience, even just waiting, counting to 30 to wait for them to answer a question, right? Compassion is an incredible space. And these are all tangible, right? Notice you can tell when someone's actually patient, not pretending patience, right? You can tell when they're compassionate. You can feel the compassion. All kinds of things show up because of it. Oh my gosh, there's so many different ways that we can be. There's also ways that are not masculine or feminine. For example, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm comes from the words that mean of God. Enthusiasm is the human spirit opposite of excitement. Excitement is wound up human instinct, right? Enthusiasm is an expression of human spirit. Joy. Oh my gosh. Whatever, whether it's joy, happiness, bliss, peace, serenity, all of those qualities are very powerful. And we don't have to be all of them. You can just pick what you want to be. You can pick more than one, but at least start with one and practice with one. And then what you do once you pick something, I'll take patience because that was one of the first that I picked because that's what I wanted to be for my kids. Yeah. As their mom, what I wanted to provide for them the most was patience. And so I had to figure out, well, so how do I get patience in my body? Because if we don't have the quality in our bodies, if we're not embodying patience, compassion, love, joy, it's just a mental construct. It might be something that we're proselytizing, we're preaching about, but we're not being it. We're incongruent. And one of the things that's amazing about men is how sensitive they are to how we're being. And when what we're saying and how we're being are incongruent, they call it insincere. When what we're saying and how we're being, if we're saying loving words and we're being loving, right, then that's authentic. That's legit to them. And they care very much about that. Authenticity is the second most attractive quality in love. So pick what you're committed to being and then figure out how to get the feeling of it in your body. For example, what I figured out was it wasn't just the number of hours that I slept. It was which hours I slept. Like if I stayed up too late, it wouldn't work. No amount would work, right? So for me, it was from about 11:30 to 7. Those were my hours back then. I woke up with patience.
Yeah.
I woke up feeling patient in my body and I would get my kids off to school patiently.
Yeah.
I didn't have to try. Another way to think of it, Emma, is to overflow, right? If we can overflow as the qualities we value, if we can overflow as compassion, if we can overflow as joy, if we can overflow as love, we're not working at it. We're so full of it. It's effortless. The effort is putting it in the body, right? Not getting it out, not expressing it. And so things like sleep, time in nature, conversations with our favoritest people, like we'll end up so full from getting to be with them. These are things that each of us has to figure out. How much sleep, how much movement, how much alone time, how much company, how much of the right kind of company, right? The right kind of good kind of being alone. How much accomplishment? I need accomplishment. Right? It's very masculine, but I've figured out how to have accomplishment in a way that nurtures the feminine. Like I save my dishes for the morning. I don't try to do them at night tired, right? Just like, oh, yeah, these dishes are right? I save them for the morning. When I wake up early, I'm all excited because I have dishes I get to do. And then I do them. I don't get them done. I don't do that. I have the accomplishment of the dishes are done and the kitchen's clean, but I do it very slowly. I have music on. I'm singing. Me and Ed Sheeran are doing the dishes together. Or Adele or fill in the blank, right? And so I'll have accomplishment, but not with a huge expenditure of testosterone. I have accomplishment puttering.
Yeah.
Right? Puttering is something that we get to do when we have plenty of time, when we're patient with ourselves.
And that creates oxytocin as well for women. So it's a really good hormonal shift. So we don't realize this again, that women need different like pottering shopping. Like that's actually a hit for us.
So important.
Yeah. All that you're saying there resonates. And I talk about nurturing lists. I do a lot of this work with women as well to go like, okay, what is going to fill up your cup and allow you to be energetically in the right space? And Rich's rule about the nervous system, again, breath coach. When you said that before, I was like, oh, I did not realize we were actually as in sync with this. But it all comes down to that nervous system and listening in and that instinct. And you've got to have that self-awareness to have self-regulation, to finally get self-compassion. And then that flows into the relationships.
It's a good way to put it. I like it.
So one thing I was really wanting to ask you, Well, what brings out the worst in men?
Gosh, the simplest way to put it, and then we can unpack it. What brings out the worst in men is attacking them and setting them loose. And by loose, I mean that they will have spent time and or energy and or resources and end up depleted. There's no return on investment. They expend those things and they don't end up with it being valued, being appreciated, being admired for it, it being received well. So what they mostly say is it's not worth it. There are so many things that men don't do because the person they did it for didn't make it worth it. They took it for granted, for example, or as one man put it, why do I always get 100 points or zero? Why can't I get 80?
Yeah.
Right? And our minds work so differently than men's. Men are problem solvers, but they're nurtured by beauty. So they focus on what is more than what isn't. Where we're always in fear of being imperfect and being caught being imperfect. We think we survive by being perfect. So we're always paying attention to what's wrong with us, what's wrong with that bouquet of flowers, what's wrong with his timing, what's wrong with what he said.
Negative, aren't we?
Oh my gosh.
That's exhausting for them to be around.
It is. And so it's one of the things that I learn is how much it matters. Since the very beginning, I've told Dan what I like about him, which is really distinct from loving somebody, right? There's love and then there's affinity, right? And so telling him, I like how you think about that. Oh, I like how you solve that. I like how you repurpose that. I like how you handle that, right? Oh, I really like how you did that. And it was so, so funny. Right from the very beginning, he said, because he said something that rattled me. And I say, could you just be quiet for a few minutes and hold space so I can reset my nervous system? And I didn't know how well acquainted he was with that when I said it to him. And he said, sure. And then he shifted. And I recovered myself in like 15 seconds. It was so fast. And I was left in awe. Your space is amazing. And you're this, you're welcome. Like, oh my gosh, I was so hot. I'd like, be still my heart. A man who owns what he's causing, not the aw shucks, it's nothing, artful dodger. So we distinguish between acknowledgement and appreciation.
Yep.
And I love these words because acknowledge has in the middle of it the word know, K-N-O-W. So if you think about that, acknowledgement causes someone to know. It's information. So whether you're causing them to know something you need by acknowledging, I have this need, or by saying something that you like about them, now they know that you like that about them, or even something that doesn't work for you, that doesn't work for me, I won't be around it, right? Or the first time Dan said, that sounds an awful lot like criticism, and I stopped taking that years ago. So sexy, Amanda would say. But criticism is a way that we attack. Why didn't you do that? Why don't you do that? What's wrong with you? That's one of the ways we attack. And if men seem defensive, go looking for how am I attacking them that I don't even realize it. Because they don't walk around defensive. They rise up in defense to the perception of an attack. And so much of what we do, they perceive as an attack. So acknowledgement is so much of what we need to do to find out if we're fit, to keep causing the other person to know more about us. And then appreciation is when you take something personally. So awesome job taking out the trash. You did all the steps, including putting in a new bag in and tying it off so it won't fall in and closing the cupboard. Thank you for doing that for me. So the appreciation is taking it personally. And that's one of the biggest things I learned in studying men was how generally women take it personally that we shouldn't and don't think take things personally that really are. Like someone taking out the trash, we wouldn't take personally. The trash needs to be taken out.
Yeah.
Not to a man, the trash doesn't need anything. It's an inanimate object. But my wife needs me to take out the trash. So I'll take out the trash for her. Yeah, it's personal.
That's such a difference.
It's huge. It's huge. We have a course. I don't know if you know about it. It's called Core Partnership. And we team up with horses in order to teach men and women to have more clarity and to be more authentic and congruent. And horses need both acknowledgement and appreciation. And they need it in that order, just like humans. And they need space to digest the acknowledgement. Oh, that's what you wanted. Or, oh, that's not what you want. Well, then what do you want? Right? Horses will do this, right? And that's it. Cool. And then the appreciation, thank you. And because they didn't do it for the health, they did it because we asked them to, right? So those two things are really important if we're going to bring out the best in men and bring out the worst in men by withholding them. We withhold acknowledgement. We wait till someone does something perfectly before we said, wow, thank you for doing it. Can I tell you things I like about how you did it? And then you tell them all the things you liked and thank you for that. And can I tell you something that would make a difference for me if you'd be willing to do it as well? Sure. Like if we just gave them the energy to produce more results, and now do you want another result to produce? Of course I do.
So I love that we've been talking about men, but for the men that are listening as well, how also does it impact women? So what are the ways that we bring out the worst in women and the best in women?
Well, they're completely similar in that you get the best from both men and women when we experience being safe. Yeah. Or most men would use the word secure. And we get the worst in both men and women when we do something that disrupts their sense of safety and security. And one of the things that I think I had, I don't know, it's probably in the top 10 of having fun sorting it out, is that when we're in that committed producing results state of mind, we feel secure when we've been producing results, we are producing results, and we can anticipate we're going to keep producing results. So it's a continuum, right? And which is why you can get a very successful man depressed because he doesn't see he's going to keep being productive. Like men upon their retirement, that can be deadly, right? And bring out the worst in them because they're not being productive. And for when we're in an open state of mind, then it's safety and feeling safe. And it's a safety that happens from being connected. So when we're in a committed state of mind, we need to be productive, and respect and trust will bring out the best in us. When we're in an open state of mind, we need to feel connected, and the right kind of interest and attention will bring out the best in. And can I tell you something that Dan did about that?
Please.
So when we were long distance, when I was talking to him on the phone, I had his undivided attention. Or if we got together for a long weekend or a vacation week together, I had all kinds of attention from him. And then I moved to his city because I wanted to just be with him every day. And he has so many accountabilities, right? His home and his family and his friends, right? So all that attention I was getting disappeared. And I freaked out. I mean, it absolutely brought out the worst in me. It was horrifying. And I was frog farming him. I was bringing out the worst in him because I kept attacking him. Like, I got more attention when I didn't live here, right? And oh my gosh, God bless him. So finally, I communicated in a way that could be heard. I moved here so I could see you every day. I need attention every day. I need to be talked to and listened to and preferably hugged and kissed every day.
It's given them the roadmap, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very clear. And we did this just before I got on with you. So he said, okay, this is what we're going to do. Your schedule's much busier than mine. And he always says this with this little, like, shit-eating smile because he's been tired over 30 years, even though he has all these accountabilities. Then, yeah. But he's like, your schedule's busier than mine. So you pick a time. Every day you pick a time and I'll come over here or you'll come over to my house and we'll lie down. What? We'll lie down. We'll lie down and we'll hold each other and we'll talk and we'll listen and maybe we'll get frisky, maybe not. Maybe we'll fall asleep, take a nap, but we'll do it every day. I burst into tears. I couldn't believe it was stunning to me. He was prepared to give that to me, to organize his day around when I have a window, and it's been over a year and a half. And it's rare for us to miss a day. We'll notice it, that, wow, there's no time for a light on today. And we have all these funny ways of interacting with things. Like, we were out, oh my gosh, I was cleaning up after my horse and my donkey. And so, I mean, we were sweaty and smelly and dirty. And so we were going to take a shower and then do a lie down. But we were too tired. We were too tired to take a shower. I've been working so hard. So I was like, I have a clean sheet. How about I put it on top of my bedspread? So that became what we call a dirty down.
Others may interpret that very differently.
Yes, and that to me is so fun.
Yeah. Oh, I love your playful side. Your playful side is so amazing, Alison, and how it comes through in your storytelling and this vulnerability around, gosh, none of us have got this perfect, right, around relationships. And it's a constantness of checking in. How am I showing up? How am I showing up in this relationship? How is this other person showing up? What do I need from them and what do I need from me to shift this? And this is a big part of what I've really witnessed from your learning and today particularly is around this choice. Yes, we have these instincts. We have this drive. And I love that you've linked the nervous system in because that's my baby. I love the nervous system when we learn to, nurture it and witness it and treasure it instead of destroy it and like push against it. It's like, oh, that is our survival mechanism for a reason. So I think the big bits that I'm taking away from this conversation, well, there's a lot, and I think I'll have to do similar to I did when I first listened to you, which is listen to the podcast episode 3 times. I've never done that before because there's so many moments of just listening and taking away going, oh, I need to shift this. I need to take responsibility. And what I really take away from you is this is personal leadership. It's leadership in all our relationships. And we all have the autonomy to do that if we choose. Have I got that right?
Yeah. And I love that you chose the word leadership because for me, leadership is carving out space for something to happen that wasn't going to.
Yeah.
It just wasn't going to happen. And so when we take that deep breath and tell our truth without defensiveness, without attitude, without screw you if you don't like it. Just this is my truth. And if you're going to run it,
run now.
And so that bravery, saying the thing that there isn't a segue, for example. So many people are looking for a segue instead of, can I change the subject?
Yep. Can I take a moment and just like turn the subject around and talk about something else.
I want to change the subject. Or pausing, we work a lot on how are we listening? What is the question at the top of our mind when someone else is speaking? Mostly that dooms us to disaster because the questions are like, what do I think about that? Or what do I know about that? Or how do I feel about that? And do I agree with that?
Instead of actually listening.
We're not even listening to the other person. Yeah. We're listening to our own question. So yeah, leadership, definitely personal leadership. I would also call it authorship. Author is a word for source, right? So we're the source of what we're saying. We're the source of what we're needing. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that women make is we think if we can have a man understand why we need something, which usually involves the word because of these things that happened to me in my past, you've got to do this in my future. And to them, that's like, wait, I got to start 10 steps behind because of some other thing.
Yeah.
And they're not motivated by the because. They're motivated by the difference it'll make. This is what I need, and this is what it'll provide for me. This is who I can be. This is what I can do. These are the capacities I'll have. If I get to sleep till 7, I'll have patience. And so the leadership in figuring out what it is that allows us to be the people that we want to be, defining it, and then how do we get it in our bodies, and then asking other people to participate in providing that for us is huge.
It's bravery.
And one of the things that's beautiful, it's bravery. And one of the things that's beautiful about men is they recognize it as beautiful. They recognize it as bravery. They recognize it as, wow, she has the courage to tell her truth. Those are the words they'll use. It has them fall in love with them. But it has them just be, wow. And even if they know they're not the right person for us, they'll go, but I know somebody for you. Because they still want to provide the right person even when they know I'm not the one you're looking for.
So grateful for your wisdom today, Alison. I never know how these conversations are going to go on the podcast. And to be honest, I was probably more nervous around your conversation. And this is my vulnerability. I know your head goes, what? And they go, because there's so much of, I guess it's that rejection piece, but around, I just adore women stepping into their power and doing what they're doing and holding you up on this little wee pedestal going, one day I'm going to be brave enough to keep working like she is. So thank you for sharing your wisdom and making it such a beautiful conversation. And I can honestly say that I have deeply got so much out of it. So I know that many others will be going away and having little aha moments, mic drop moments, and going, maybe asking for sex more like you did in your relationship with Drew.
Thank you. And you're very welcome.
So how can people find out about you? And we'll put it in the show notes, all the links and some of the favorite things. I know you've got your Understanding Men, Understanding Woman, Queen's Code. There's a lot of resources. Where do they actually start? Yes. How do they get in touch with you?
Oh, boy.
Because there's a lot.
If you're going to start with a book, I would say listen to the Queen's Code audiobook. And LUX stands for Liberation, Understanding, and Extraordinary Relationships. It's less than 8 hours, but oh my gosh, does it pack a punch. In basically what I see is the only three things we can control. How are we being? How are we listening? And what are we speaking for? So I'd start with that. That's a good place to start. I'm doing your Queen's Code journey again, starting next week. So people, if they want to, they can listen to the chapters of the book that we're working on. And then I spend an hour and a half on Zoom answering questions about the parts that we've listened to and help people customize things like the vow for what they're committed to and help them get through the tricky parts of changing our perception so radically. So that's coming up too, they can do. And then I'm going to be live in Los Angeles at the end of October.
Oh, well, I would love people to come to that, but this is coming out probably after that, unfortunately. But I know people go onto your website, there'll be so many other events to check in with you for later 2023 and 2024. That sounds amazing.
Yep, we'll have our intensives again in 2024. Yep.
Amazing. So grateful
for you. Thank
you,
Emma.
You're very welcome. I've loved our time together. And for anybody that has been curious around human interactions and men and women, Alison Armstrong is your woman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Bravery Academy. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you're looking to take your support for the podcast to the next level, visit patreon.com/thebraveryacademy to access exclusive content and get early access to our upcoming episodes. Your feedback means the world to us. So please take a moment to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for being part of the Bravery Academy community. Stay brave, stay curious, and keep challenging yourself to grow. Until next time.